Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Boulder Nutrition Radio. I'm Sue Van Rays, your host, and here we are on HealthyLife.net, and I can't wait to share with you today's incredible guest. But before I do, I just want to say thank you to our incredible producer, Jay, who is here taking care of all of the tech and making sure things go smoothly for us, and we're so grateful that you are here holding this space. I am excited to share with you one of my favorite mentors and special guests, a woman who has really influenced my work and really been an inspiration for me going way back to my early days as a food psychology specialist and functional nutritionist, and that is Dr. Anita Johnston. She is an incredible storyteller. She is the author of the very well-known book, Eating in the Light of the Moon, How Women Can Transform Their Relationships with Food Through Myth, Metaphor, and Storytelling. She's a clinical psychologist, a certified eating disorder specialist, and she works in the field of helping women heal their relationship to food and eating disorders for over 35 years. She's also the founder and clinical director of IVPONO, eating disorder programs, outpatient clinic on Oahu and the Big Island of Hawaii, and an oceanfront residential program on Maui. What an amazing treat to have you here, Anita. I'm so glad to be with you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So you and I have done many different interviews and had many conversations, and I know you were so supportive when my brand new book just came out this spring, Food and Freedom, with your insights and endorsement, and I am so excited to just share your work with our listeners, because what I've found in, like, learning from you over all these years is that you really have such a unique perspective on how we can heal through these different stories and myths and metaphors that you so specialize in. And I'm just wondering if you could kind of take us back in time a little bit and tell us a little bit about how you got into this work and what really drove you to this very specific niche in your field that has just really made such an impact on women, on eating, on the eating disorder field, and on health overall, over all these years?
Well, we have to go way back. I grew up on the island of Guam, and in an indigenous and multi-ethnic household. So storytelling is something that was used to communicate important values, or to entertain, to make sense out of things a lot of times. And so it's natural for me to think in story form, but I didn't realize that. And so when I became a psychologist, basically my training was in story listening, right? And so I learned to listen very carefully to the stories of the people that came to see me, and to see if I could see, okay, what's beneath it all? How can I read between the lines, or how can I see the bigger picture? So it was something that I naturally came to, but I never really thought about applying it seriously to my work with women who were struggling with all kinds of eating difficulties. until my daughters were going to Waldorf school when they were little. And they would come home and they would say, oh, today we learned about Prince division and Prince multiplication. And, you know, they're in, like, first grade. And I'm thinking, wow, so they're not going to be learning this kind of math until later. But the story has been seeded. And I even thought to myself, oh, my gosh, I would probably know my times tables by now if I had learned it like that. So that's when I started to realize, okay, you can use story to communicate some very complex ideas in a way that someone can make sense out of that. So that was the very beginning of how I started using story. And then I would begin to realize that the stories that I would tell my clients had an impact in that they remembered them.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, so I thought, wow, story is this really powerful way of communicating. And, of course, I didn't invent it. This is what people have been doing for eons, right? I mean, parables, stories, way before there was even written language, right? So the story seems to be an incredible vehicle to communicate concepts that were sometimes difficult to understand and also sometimes really difficult to remember. So that was the beginning for me.
I love it. And I love that it was very organic and really part of your childhood and the culture that you grew up in. And then I also love that, isn't it amazing how much we learn from our kids, right? Isn't it amazing how the moments that come through to kind of land and make things even more solid in our beings are often shown to us through children. My kids also were in Waldorf school, and it was an amazing igniter of my own inspiration watching how they transformed through some of these ancient modalities, really. And the story and the imagination is such a powerful tool in so many facets of our lives. And I think, I do think it often gets overlooked at how powerful it is in really creating change and transformation in our lives. And I've been studying that a lot lately and been super inspired just by using my imagination to really, like, indulge in my vision and indulge in what I'm working on going forward. And I'd love to know from you, having so much experience in this realm, can you tell us a little bit about what is actually happening in our brains when we hear this different kind of language that can really promote such beautiful and powerful feelings?
Right. I mean, that's what's really been the fun part of all of this for me is I kind of stumbled upon it. But now the neuroscience is there telling us what's going on. So that's really makes it a lot of fun. Because you figure, so for 100,000 years, humans have relied on story in every culture on the planet, right? So that what has happened is that our human brain has been evolutionarily wired to think in story form. And not only that, but to use story, the structure of story, to create meaning, and even to use story to make sense out of events and the behaviors of others. So basically, we're hardwired to think in story form. And when we're children, that's when our brain is the most plastic. That's when you know, it's developing like crazy. And we hear stories, and we see stories, and we read stories, or we have them read to us. So what happens is in our brains, we develop a powerful story neural network. So what we know with neuroscience is that neurons that fire together, wire together. So they start to come together in a particular form, so that they call it story architecture in the brain. And so our brain is literally hardwired for stories. And we have an evolved responsiveness to these patterns of stories. And I'm a bit of a neuroscience geek, because I kind of could get excited about this. I was like, well, wait, how did they discover it? So they went into an EK lab, and they watched subjects' brains on stories. And they used everything from, you know, cardio monitors and skin galvanic monitors and video cameras to watch, like, subtle shifts in the veins in the face and the muscles around the eyes. And they gathered, you know, chemicals, oxytocin and dopamine, trying to identify what is it that really causes people to be engaged and transport themselves into the story, to be affected by it, and at the end, feel like the story was powerful, memorable, and somehow had affected their lives, right? So, because that's what we want, the stories that have an impact, at least for me as a psychologist, those are the stories I'm listening for. So they find this architecture, and now they can actually see the neural network, where there's different parts of the brain firing together. Interestingly enough, it's in the lower, more primal part of the brain. And so the information first comes in this lower part of the brain, and then it moves through this story network that has been created in the brain all the way to our conscious mind. And so whatever gets to our conscious mind is already our own story version of the material of the story we're listening to, right? So we adjust it. Think about, like, if someone's telling you a story about a tree, everybody has a different version of that tree, right? It's going through your own interpretation. And all of this happens in the blink of an eye. I mean, it's so amazing when you think about that.
Oh, wow.
So this is going on in your brain. And when it comes to these kinds of stories, now, there's a difference between story and narrative. So all stories are narratives, but not all narratives are stories. Some narratives are not stories. If you think about what a narrative is, a reporting of the facts. This happened, and then this happened. And they don't have a prescribed format. Oh, yeah, and then I forgot this. And it's just this kind of pieces of information that are kind of thrown together. So, you know, what you read, like in newspapers and magazines or journals, they're mostly narrative. Here's the facts. Here's the information. What gives a story, the way I refer to story, it's life, is as you mentioned, the imagination, the inspiration, and the experience that you have with the story. Because narratives actually work against what a story tries to do. So narratives, they actually disconnect us from our inner life, and they separate us from our human community, and they don't really connect us with a sense of being a person on a journey, right? It's like you can say, well, this happened, and then this led to this, but what happens is stories, they evoke our imagination, and then they inspire us as we relate to them from our own experience. Remember, it goes through that part of your brain where it makes it your own. So it's kind of like a relational quality, and that's why we get not just inspired, but we get enchanted and guided and sometimes even transformed by these kinds of stories. So stories, for me, are such a powerful tool, if you will.
I love this. It's an incredible modality that I feel doesn't get as much attention as it deserves for a couple of reasons. One is because of its history, right? As you said, it goes so far back to the beginning of time, really, where humans are wired for this. And yet, it's almost like a dying art, because there's not very many people that I know that can tell a story that can really work in that way of cultivating imagination that has the kind of impact that your work has. And clearly, that is shown in the fact, I was looking at your book and some of the statistics of your book, Eating in the Light of the Moon, which has remained a best seller and been published in 6 different languages for so long. It is such an incredible resource. So if you haven't checked out Eating in the Light of the Moon, how women can transform their relationships with food through myths, metaphors, and storytelling by Dr. Anita Johnston, you've got to get your hands on this book. There is so many incredible stories in here that are tailored specifically to healing our relationship to food. And I'd love to know a little bit more about that from you, if you can speak to. I love everything you've told us about the history of story and how it's such a profound tool. How do you see this tool and this modality really supporting, especially the women you work with, in healing their relationship to food and body?
Well, one of the things, again, going back to the story, and is that it becomes personal, right? So it might be a story, like the Three Little Pigs or whatever, and yet the message becomes personal to us. We understand it. We make sense of it according to us. So I'm working with someone trying to recover from some form of disordered eating. I don't want them to have my idea of what recovery is. I want them to create their own. And so, of course, there are certain components and certain skills even a person needs to learn, but they need to learn it their way. And so when you introduce these concepts in story form, they get to decide, you know, what fits for them, what's going to work for them, what part makes meaning, what is relevant to them. So even though these stories are old, right, we all know about, like, Beauty and the Beast. But did you know that it's 6,000 years old?
Mm.
6,000. I can't even wrap my mind around it. Yet they've done these studies to see that. And so what happens is these old stories somewhere inside of us, because they speak in the language of archetypes and metaphor, which is already seeded in our psyche, something wakes up. And so something comes to life in them. And when I'm working with someone who's really struggling, they barely have any energy for healing, right? They feel helpless and hopeless. And so, but if I present a story that has a character that has been through all kinds of difficulty and yet they found resources, I'm bringing energy into the room. And so, you know, that's the first thing that's needed when someone is trying to heal.
I think that's an incredible perspective, and I love how you can really see when someone is in the thick of it with whatever it is they're struggling with, it's really hard for them to dig deep and find residue of energy when they're so depleted. And I love how these stories, and I'm sure we'll get into more of those in a couple minutes, but I love how your stories and story in general can be an energizer to the room, to an energizer to someone's imagination, an energizer to someone's being. That is another incredible ingredient in cultivating the ability to move towards transformation, to move towards something different, to move towards healing. So I've never actually heard you say that before, and that is a very profound perspective. So thank you so much for that. That is just gold. I love it.
Yeah, because when someone is struggling, whether it's with disordered eating, body image, addiction, depression, anxiety, what's happening for them is they're not able to fully participate in life. And they kind of get caught up in really a lot of negative thoughts about themselves and their abilities and their capacity. So in that sense, they don't feel a part of life. They don't even feel like they're a part of humanity. And so story is a way to very gently kind of bring them back to that kind of connection to the rest of humanity, even if we're talking about a once upon a time, right? And so... this is what helps them find the meaning beneath their struggle. So many years ago, when I was a young graduate student, in fact, the first class that I walked into, There was a little old man, and he was speaking in an accent that was really difficult for me to understand, but it was English, so I had to really pay attention. Now, this man was Viktor Frankl. I had no idea who he was. And for those of your listeners who don't, he was an amazing, incredible man that wrote one of the most profound books of the 20th century, Man's Search for Meaning. And it's his story about being in the concentration camps in Nazi Germany, where he lost everything, his wife, his parents, his entire family. But he wrote this extraordinary book where he talked about how you can be stripped of everything, everything that has ever been dear to you in your life, but there's one thing that can never, ever, ever be taken away from you, and that is the meaning you give to your experience. And in that meaning lies your freedom. So that's how I started using the stories to help people find the meaning to whatever the struggle was boiled in.
Wow. That is powerful. And I think when you said adding the meaning to their struggle, something really landed for me. What an incredible experience to be able to learn from that man and to be able to see how powerful experiences and the meanings that we give to them can really be. It's like the place inside of us that's untouchable. And when we can really anchor in there, it does provide so much sovereignty in our lives. So I appreciate that. We are going to take a really quick break and come back to hear more from Dr. Anita Johnston on the healing powers of myth, metaphor, and storytelling. And a little story for you, a special story from her. You can find out more about her at dranitajohnston.com. And I'm Sue Van Rays. You're listening to Boulder Nutrition Radio on healthylife.net, and we will be right back.
Food is not just about food. If you need to remedy emotional eating or need to confidently improve your self-compassion or just need a solution to help your own unique biochemistry to eat healthy and support your whole person, including your emotions, then your solution is Sue Van Rays' new book, Food and Freedom. This trustworthy guide, based on thousands of client sessions, gives you teachings and tips to attain pleasure not only with food, but life itself. Food and Freedom by Sue Van Rays is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and fine bookstores everywhere. Food and freedom.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
When you visit BoulderNutrition.com and click on the Work With Me link at the top of the homepage, you'll be amazed and pleased about how Sue Van Rays wants to help you with your food and freedom. Whether local, national, or worldwide, Sue can be there for you. Imagine a private one-on-one session or take one of her transforming classes or even an online program. Something for everyone. After thousands of clients, Sue knows how to help you. So visit BoulderNutrition.com and find your right program now. That's BoulderNutrition.com.
For the best in business class travel, count on Cheapo Air. Cheapo Air has the best price guarantee, 24/7 customer service, and easy booking online or by phone. To experience your hassle-free journey, start by going to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Cheapo Air.
Okay, I get it. You need a vacation, but what if you could get a fun, healthy getaway that provides you positive personal transformation? Well, that's just what Sue Van Rays retreats do. Think Colorado, Costa Rica, Bali. Now add tasty, healthy food, inspired living, yoga, meditation, and sacred self-care. Well, that sounds relaxing and fun. Check out Sue's retreats on her website, BoulderNutrition.com. That's BoulderNutrition.com. I'm relaxing already.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Thank you for tuning in and staying with us. I'm Sue Van Rays, and we're continuing on with Dr. Anita Johnston all about the healing power of myth, metaphor, and storytelling. Just so you know, you can find out more about her at DrAnitaJohnston.com. And I'm Sue Van Rays. This is Boulder Nutrition Radio on HealthyLife.net. We are so excited to move into this next little conversation because we get to hear in real time one of Dr. Anita Johnston's very well-known stories that I have just been so inspired by over many years of listening to her tell it and reading it in her book, Eating in the Light of the Moon. So I'm really excited to share this next little bit with you because we get to hear her incredible storytelling skills, like, at work. So what a treat. Thank you for doing that with us. And let's dive in.
Okay. Story time. Well, I can share, this is a story, this is not one of the old stories. This is a story that I have told many years, and it's become my favorite story. It's more of like a metaphor, but it's my favorite because I continue to get emails and letters from people all over the world telling me that this one story transformed their struggle with eating or their struggle with addiction or their struggle with whatever it was that's been going on. So I thought, well, maybe I'll share that here for your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
As you had mentioned earlier, these stories, we always begin with the imagination, right? Because that's our superpower. That's what helps us with these stories and makes them our own. So imagine you're on the banks of a raging river. It's pouring down rain. You slip, you fall in, and you're drowning. You're getting pulled down through the rapids. And along comes a big log, and you grab on. And the log saves your life. It keeps your head above water when surely you would have drowned. And eventually, it carries you to a place in the river where the water is calm. And from there, you can see the riverbank. But you can't get there because you're holding so tight onto the log. So the irony is the very thing that just saved your life is getting in the way now of you getting where you want to go in life. And to make it more complicated, there's always someone on the riverbank yelling, let go of the store, let go of the log, let go of the log. And you can't let go of the log, and you feel like an absolute idiot. Now, the way I see it is letting go of the log may not be the very best thing to do, because what happens if you let go of that log, start to swim to shore, get halfway there, and realize, oh, shoot, I don't have the strength to make it. Well, that means you don't have the strength to make it back to the log either, and you're really sunk. So what do you do instead, right? Because this wise part of you will not let you let go of anything until you're good and ready. So maybe you try floating, and when you start to sink, you grab back on. Then maybe you try treading water, and when you get tired, you grab back on. And then you swim around the log once, grab back on. Twice, grab back on. 10 times, grab back on. 100 times, 200 times. Whatever it takes for you to have the strength and confidence to make it to shore, then you let go of the log. So I tell this story when I'm trying to help someone understand what the recovery journey looks like, right? Because so many of us think, okay, all I got to do is just this, and it's one and done. And then when that doesn't happen, we think there's something wrong with us. And so this idea that, well, first of all, whatever the struggle is has a reason for getting back to that meaning. And it could be a very good reason why you grabbed on to whatever the behaviors are that are now causing you a great deal of stress, that are now getting in the way of you getting where you want to go in life. But it's sort of like you have to know what its job is if you're going to put it out of a job, right? So we have to understand, well, what has this set of behaviors done for you, not just to you? It's really easy, for example, with disordered eating to say, yeah, it's making me miserable, it's messing up my relationship. But wait, what is it doing for you? So starting to look for that, because in this metaphor, the log keeps you afloat. Now notice when the language that I use has to do with drowning, because that kind of stirs up certain feelings in us. For example, the difference between saying, I have a lot of paperwork to do, and I'm drowning in paperwork, it's a very different feeling, right? It's like we feel what it's like to be getting pulled down, and it's hard to breathe, and you're struggling. So that kind of amplifies the experience. So this is a way of helping someone understand that they grabbed onto this at a time when maybe they didn't have the resources or the support or the maturity or the understanding, whatever it is they needed. And so they discovered, oh, if I do this, I can at least stay afloat. Now, mind you, with a story like this, I'm not even talking about what the struggle is, right? I'm taking them into the experience of the struggle, and they will define for themselves what their log is. And interestingly enough, different people describe their log very differently. And again, this makes it theirs. They own it. So I'm trying with a story like this, I'm trying to take away some of the shame that people feel, because that is an energy suck for sure when someone's trying to heal. And so helping them have a whole different perspective about the meaning underneath the struggle. And how it has served them in some way, and understanding it would behoove you to find out what its function has been. And then I'm introducing the idea that, okay, that insight is a good insight. You need that insight, but insight's not enough with recovery. Now you got to build some skills, right? So whether that's floating or treading water or swimming, as I use metaphorically, this idea that as you develop those skills, you will get stronger and stronger and stronger, and eventually you'll that you won't need it any longer.
Mm. What an incredible experience to hear this story and then to hear you really break it down. And one of the things that really jumped out to me that you just said was the log looks different for everyone, and everyone's description is so different. And I would imagine that includes sometimes the log might be directly related to food when we're talking about healing our relationship to food. But as you and I both know, there's so many things that come underneath of our struggles with our eating. And I'm curious, is that often what you hear in people's description of the log as well, is what might even be underneath of their food stress?
Oh, totally. Like, they might say, I grab onto my log whenever I experience conflict, right?
Yeah.
So their disordered eating is a way they cope with conflict. Or for them, it might be whenever they feel lonely or frightened or just plain overwhelmed. So they have to grab onto something when life feels like too much.
Mm, so good. Thank you so much for that. So we're going to come right back and hear more from Dr. Anita Johnston about metaphor. You're listening to Boulder Nutrition Radio. This is Sue Van Rays, and I can't wait to share with you this next little bit. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening.
When you visit BoulderNutrition.com, you'll be able to discover all things Sue. There's info on her book, courses, retreats, and how to get your very own food therapy session. BoulderNutrition.com. And when you visit BoulderNutrition.com, click on free at the top of the homepage, and you can get a free guide called Make Peace with Your Plate, which gives you helpful daily practices to promote your food and body freedom. So what are you waiting for? Visit BoulderNutrition.com now and make peace with your plate.
ASMC, the premier German company that supplies everything for adventure. From outdoor clothes to outdoor gear, even backpacks. Lots of quality and lots of specials. To start your adventure, go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ASMC.
Food is not just about food. If you need to remedy emotional eating or need to confidently improve your self-compassion or just need a solution to help your own unique biochemistry to eat healthy and support your whole person, including your emotions, then your solution is Sue Van Ray's new book, Food and Freedom. This trustworthy guide, based on thousands of client sessions, gives you teachings and tips to attain pleasure not only with food, but life itself. Food and Freedom by Sue Van Ray's is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and fine bookstores everywhere. Food and freedom.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
When you visit BoulderNutrition.com and click on the Work With Me link at the top of the homepage, you'll be amazed and pleased about how Sue Van Ray's wants to help you with your food and freedom. Whether local, national, or worldwide, Sue can be there for you. Imagine a private one-on-one session or take one of her transforming classes or even an online program. Something for everyone. After thousands of clients, Sue knows how to help you. So visit BoulderNutrition.com and find your right program now. That's BoulderNutrition.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Welcome back. We've been chatting with Dr. Anita Johnston here on Boulder Nutrition Radio. I'm your host, Sue Van Rays, and I am so curious to hear from you, Anita, more about metaphor, because we've done a little storytelling and we've talked a little bit about imagination and cultivating this particular part of our brains when we really activate the imagination. One of the things that I know you are so profound at teaching is about listening to our bodies and learning how to read into some of the things that happen around our hunger or our fullness when it comes to craving, and how we can use metaphor as one of the ways to investigate what's going on in our bodies and in our lives. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you use metaphor and then maybe some ways that we can kind of be detectives in our own cravings.
Okay, well, metaphor is the language of story, right? And Carl Jung called metaphor the healing symbol. And he proposed that the reason for that is that metaphor is effective on three levels in our psyche. The mental, where we interpret the meaning. The emotional, where we connect to the feelings embedded in the metaphor, and then the imaginative. And that's where the actual transforming power resides. So the healing power of metaphor is in the imaginative realm, the ability to imagine. And the thing that he said, though, that's so cool, is that simultaneous operation on these levels allows the metaphor to make a deep connection to the psyche, and because of this, change can be more immediate. So this is why I kind of got into using metaphor for people struggling with eating and food. If you can think of, you know, just how it feels different. So when Shakespeare says, out, out, breathe candle, instead of, and then she died, right? We feel something totally different. Or when Romeo says, Juliet is the sun, we know he's not saying she's a flaming ball of hydrogen. Right? He's trying to say, she lights up my world. So when working with struggles with food, what happens is people start to look at the foods they struggle with too literally. And if they can put on their metaphoric glasses, they're using a metaphoric lens, they can see something totally different that actually takes them closer to the truth. So it's this understanding that there's physical hunger, but there's also metaphoric hunger that we have. And that can be, you know, all kinds of things. Hunger for attention, affection, appreciation, acknowledgement. Just, we have so many hungers. And we confuse it, though, with the hunger for food. So So what happens when you look at food metaphorically, things can shift. So let's say, for example, you're craving sweet food. Now, we use that word sweet for so many other things, not just food, right? Oh, what a sweetheart, or that was a sweet thing to do, or where's the sweet spot? So when if you have a craving for sweets and you're not physically hungry, then perhaps you're trying to find more sweetness in your life, or maybe you're feeling like you're not sweet enough. Crunchy, salty foods often are connected to frustration around our anger around something in your life. If you think of the experience of chewing on something, right? I'm frustrated. So you might want to look to see, well, what am I frustrated with right now? What am I angry about that I'm not expressing? Spicy foods often are connected to, and mind you, this is for people that want to eat these foods and they're hungry but they won't let themselves, or if they won't let themselves eat these foods when they are hungry. So spicy foods are connected to a fear of or a craving for excitement, stimulation, and change. And if you take a food like chocolate, we know this from Valentine's Day, right? Love, romance, sensuality, and sexuality. So when you start to really look at the food differently, you can get to the meaning that's embedded in the foods themselves. But either you, and it only works if you're wanting those foods and you're not hungry, or you're not letting yourself have those foods when you are hungry.
It's such a beautiful way to look at the things that are coming up for us. Because I think so often we get stuck on externalized approaches to eating, good girl, bad girl thinking, what we should be doing, what we should be eating, lots of shoulds, and it really takes us out of these deeper opportunities for investigating meaning, investigating places in our lives that might be out of balance, investigating things that might be really calling to us and showing up in all these interesting ways and interesting cravings. I really see how we can't really separate ourselves from our eating. Like, we're so integral with this most primal and profound relationship with food. And so it only makes sense that these metaphors, just like in so many other ways, are showing up in our eating. And it's such a great place to really do some inner listening and to play with it and make it fun and see what we can learn from these different cues in our bodies.
Exactly. There's been so much morality that has been tangled up in food and judgment. And the problem with that kind of judgment is that it slams the door shut to getting to a deeper meaning of things. If you just say, well, I shouldn't eat that, or, oh, that's bad food, or you're not going to learn anything about yourself. And this exploration of looking at the foods metaphorically really is a journey towards connecting with your authentic self. And in my mind, that's what recovery is.
Oh, wow, so incredible. I really just want to shout out that you were so gracious to come and be a guest teacher in my flagship program, the Make Peace with Your Plate Women's Collective, and that is actually opening for registration later this week. So one way that you can also learn from Dr. Anita Johnston is there, but also be sure to check out her work at dranitajohnston.com. Be sure to check out her book, Eating in the Light of the Moon, How Women Can Transform Their Relationships with Food Through Myth, Metaphor, and Storytelling. And tell us a little bit about what you have going on right now, what's inspiring you in your work, and anything that you have coming up that you'd like to share.
Well, I have a lot going on at the Light of the Moon Cafe. So that's my online program. If anyone wants to go, lightofthemooncafe.com/mygift. And you'll get a PDF that shows you how to work with metaphor with a particular food. It can walk you through that. And I also just finished doing a webinar. So if anyone is more interested in working with stories and metaphor with food. It's a free webinar, again, liveofthemooncafe.com/webinar. Those are the things that I'm really excited about, and I'm writing a new book, but that's still in the works.
Wow, that's incredible, and some new information for me, so congratulations. I can't wait to hear more about that. Wow. You have some really beautiful offerings, and your work has been around for decades, and you've helped thousands and thousands of women really dig deeper into their own healing and really into looking at food and their relationship to food and their eating with such a different and beautiful perspective. And I know that your impact has been just profound in this way. So thank you so much for sharing your work. Thank you so much for being here. And we are here with Dr. Anita Johnston, hearing all about the power of myth, metaphor, and storytelling. And I will be right back with the Make Peace with Your Plate perspectives. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Anita Johnston.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, I get it. You need a vacation, but what if you could get a fun, healthy getaway that provides you positive personal transformation? Well, that's just what Sue Van Reyes retreats do. Think Colorado, Costa Rica, Bali. Now add tasty, healthy food, inspired living, yoga, meditation, and sacred self-care. Well, that sounds relaxing and fun. Check out Sue's retreats on her website, bouldernutrition.com. That's bouldernutrition.com. I'm relaxing already. Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com. When you visit bouldernutrition.com, you'll be able to discover all things Sue. There's info on her book, courses, retreats, and how to get your very own food therapy session. bouldernutrition.com. And when you visit bouldernutrition.com, click on free at the top of the homepage and you can get a free guide called Make Peace with Your Plate, which gives you helpful daily practices to promote your food and body freedom. So what are you waiting for? Visit bouldernutrition.com now and make peace with your plate.
You have too little time to shop, so try Farm Fresh to You. They deliver organic food the way nature intended, delivered straight to your home or office, economically. Visit our web advertiser page and click on Farm Fresh to You now.
Food is not just about food. If you need to remedy emotional eating or need to confidently improve your self-compassion or just need a solution to help your own unique biochemistry to eat healthy and support your whole person, including your emotions, then your solution is Sue Van Rey's new book, Food and Freedom. This trustworthy guide, based on thousands of client sessions, gives you teachings and tips to attain pleasure not only with food but life itself. Food and Freedom by Sue Van Rey's is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and fine bookstores everywhere. Food and Freedom.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Thank you so much for tuning in and staying with us. I'm Sue Van Reyes, and this is Boulder Nutrition Radio here on HealthyLife.net. And I love to finish up our time together with a little solo time with me and a little opportunity to gain some Make Peace with Your Plate perspective. Before I dive into today's tips and tricks, I just want to announce that I have a free class that is live this week called Savor. And that is a 3-day class, an hour a day. You can find out all about that at bouldernutrition.com. That class is where we are going to dive into the sacred language of your body and how to use it in your eating. And then also later this week, my flagship program, Make Peace with Your Plate Women's Collective, opens for registration. And Dr. Anita Johnston, who we just had with us, is one of the premier guest teachers in the program, and I can't wait to come together with this fall's group of women in that particular format in joining into our 10 weeks of diving into our relationship with food. So I thought today, since we just heard from Dr. Anita Johnston about myth, metaphor, and story, and specifically about cravings, hunger, fullness, and some of the deeper meanings that come with those, that we could take a little tour through hunger and fullness together in the Make Peace with Your Plate perspective, this little solo time with me. Because what I find is when we understand a little bit more about what's going on with our hunger and fullness cues, we can get deeper into the knowing of the biochemistry and the hormonal reactions in our body and get out of the self-criticism, the judgment, all the things that happen when we feel like food is a stressor in our lives. So let's take a little tour through hunger and fullness and the hunger and fullness hormones, ghrelin being the hunger hormone and leptin being the fullness hormone. And as we experience hunger and our ghrelin rises, we might notice different kinds of cravings in our bodies. Maybe we need protein, maybe we need a little extra something to give us energy, like a whole carbohydrate. Maybe we're going to reach for something that our bodies are needing that might come in the form of a food such as minerals like magnesium or iodine, and we might find ourselves having interesting cravings for chocolate or shrimp or something that will be actually helping our bodies come into biochemical balance. As our leptin levels rise, we start to be cued that we're satiated. We start to feel a shift in the taste of our food. If we were an animal grazing on grass in the Serengeti, if we were a zebra grazing on grass in the Serengeti, and our leptin levels started to rise, we would notice that the grass would stop tasting as good. The grass would not be as attractive to our palate. The sensation of flavor from the grass would change, and that zebra would then stop eating. We have these very same primal cues happening in our bodies. We do, if we pay attention, we can notice where flavor changes, where the food becomes less attractive, where the smell of the food might not smell as good as we get more satiated. And these cues in our bodies, our hunger and fullness, start to become more and more available to us as we pay more and more attention. So you might notice that you are having trouble hearing those cues in your own body, especially if food has been a stressor for you. And I just want to remind you of two things. Number one, you can really start to pay attention. And as you pay attention, the whisper of these cues will get a little bit louder. It's like you'll start to decode what these cues are telling you much more quickly. You'll start to notice when the cravings get louder. You'll start to be able to recognize if the cravings are coming from a deep place in your biochemistry or if they're coming from some other kind of hunger, like emotional hunger or mind hunger, where they are a reaction to something being out of balance. Similarly, you'll start to be able to notice your satiation cues, your fullness cues being more available to you. You'll start to notice the change of flavor or smell or texture of a food as it starts to become less needed by your body, as you start to become more satiated. And you will start to notice when you have the desire to override those cues. And when you do, you'll have the opportunity to do a little bit of inquiry into what is going on in your body, in your life, that might be throwing you a little bit out of balance. So one of the things I like to tell people about is that one of the most incredible ways that these hunger and fullness hormones get out of balance is through stress. So if you've been stressed lately, or even if your body's been going through a stressor, including not sleeping well, not getting enough water, things being out of balance in your life, you will notice that your hunger and fullness hormones change. One rough night of sleep can alter your hunger and fullness hormones. It will raise your ghrelin levels, making you more hungry, and it will lower your leptin levels, making you harder to satiate. And while so many of us find ourselves in a tailspin of judgment and thinking there's something wrong with us and not understanding why our cravings are out of control, look deeper. Look between the lines into some of the other places in your life where things might be coming from a source of stress. And include even those things that could be just as simple as a wakeful night of sleep. When this happens, we start to create these biochemical scenarios that make so much more sense when we understand what's happening in our bodies. Understand what's happening in our bodies. The number one thing we can cultivate in ourselves that will completely transform your relationship with food is self-compassion, is a deep knowing that there's something out of balance and that you can set down the inner critic part of your brain and bring in the part of you that can tend to yourself with love and compassion. We are going to go over so much of this in the Make Peace with Your Plate Women's Collective flagship program that's opening for registration later this week. So if you are needing support, join us for this 10-week immersion into all the different layers of your eating. I love being here with you on Boulder Nutrition Radio at HealthyLife.net. It is a joy to share Dr. Anita Johnston, one of my most impactful mentors and friends, here with you today. And if you are looking for more recordings of past episodes or more information that can help you on your health and healing journey, be sure to visit bouldernutrition.com/radio and click on the links to previous episodes where you can learn more about how to make peace with your plate and your life. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm Sue Van Rays, Boulder Nutrition Radio, and we will see you soon for another episode. Take great care.